You can do it while we're taking the pledge. Have 7 Falcons House meeting order, please. Please rise and pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Coke?
Here.
Colosimo?
Present.
Malszewski?
Here.
Frieders?
Here.
Funkhauser?
Here.
Turulis?
Here.
Teeling?
Here.
Quorum is established.
Any amendments to tonight's agenda? No presentations, no public hearings, or any citizen comments on items that are on the agenda this evening? I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Oh, okay.
Roll call, please.
I'm sorry, who's so moved? I'll move back after a second. Colosimo?
Aye.
Malszewski?
Aye.
Turulis?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Coke?
Aye.
Teeling?
Aye.
Motion passes.
I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the regular city council meeting of March 14th, 2017, as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any comments or questions or corrections on minutes? All those in favor of approving as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, next under mayor's report, I'll entertain a motion to approve the mayor's appointment of Arvin Joe Folker as alderman of Ward 2. The same for me and Larry Costello of office.
Second.
Comments or questions? Joe, why don't you come forward?
After all these years, you think I get the name right.
Yeah.
You want to copy that? Please raise your right hand.
Don't you vote for it?
Oh, we do know one.
Yeah, you do, exactly.
But you probably approve it before you swear it in.
Legalities, yeah.
Legalities.
Do we have any comments or questions? Roll call, please.
Teeling?
Aye.
Coke?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Turulis?
Aye.
Colosimo?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Malszewski?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Now we do it, Joe. Okay. I state your name.
I, Joe Folker.
Having been appointed to the office of Alderman Ward 2.
Having been appointed to the office of Alderman Ward 2.
In the United City of Yorkville.
In the United City of Yorkville.
In the County of Kendall, aforesaid.
In the County of Kendall, aforesaid.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties.
And I will faithfully discharge the duties.
Of the office of Alderman Ward 2.
Of the office of Alderman Ward 2.
Of the United City of Yorkville.
In the United City of Yorkville.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Welcome back to Ward. Bring all through.
Come on,
guys.
You're just
going to
take a picture.
Why? This is Chris, John, and.
All right.
I'm good.
All right, I believe you can take a seat right there.
I'll see you later.
Go get ice cream.
All right, let's go get ice cream.
Yay!
Next, I have a proclamation for Motorcycle Awareness Month. Watch out for motorcycles out there. If you'd like to read the whole proclamation, it's in the bag. Okay, next, entertain a motion to approve a resolution approving an amendment to project agreement OS 13-1864 with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources for Riverfront Park, and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
So moved. Second.
Comments or questions? Roll call, please.
Clocher.
Aye.
Freeters.
Aye.
Torulis.
Aye.
Colosimo.
Aye.
Hunkhauser.
Aye.
Wachuski.
Aye.
Teeling.
Aye.
Coke.
Aye.
Motion passes.
I'll entertain a motion to authorize staff to issue a request for proposals for downtown sidewalk and fencing replacement.
So moved.
Second.
Comments or questions? Roll call, please.
Freeters.
Aye.
Torulis.
Aye.
Colosimo.
Aye.
Hunkhauser.
Aye.
Wachuski.
Aye.
Teeling.
Aye.
Coke.
Aye.
Clocher.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Next is a motion to approve a resolution approving the purchase of 102 East Van Emmon, and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
So moved.
Second.
Comments or questions? Roll call, please.
Torulis.
Aye.
Colosimo.
Aye.
Hunkhauser.
Aye.
Wachuski.
Aye.
Teeling.
Aye.
Coke.
Aye.
Clocher.
Aye.
Freeters.
Present.
Motion passes.
Next, I'll entertain a motion to approve an ordinance approving the 7th amendment to the annual budget for the fiscal year commencing on May 1, 2016 and ending on April 30th, 2017, and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
So moved.
Second.
Comments or questions? Roll call, please.
Colosimo.
Aye.
Hunkhauser.
Aye.
Wachuski.
Aye.
Teeling.
Aye.
Coke.
Aye.
Clocher.
Aye.
Freeters.
Aye.
The last vote where Joel voted present, it should be recusing yourself.
Recusing.
Which is approved by the chair.
Yes.
Not present. Thank you.
Sorry for the miscommunication.
Sure.
I was Freeters on this one.
Oh, on this one am I. I also had a comment, but you didn't see me waving.
And Torulis.
Aye.
Motion passes.
You want to make a comment now?
Yeah, is that okay?
Sure.
It mentions that you're not seriously going to collect the information and use it for any purposes. It mentions there's different kinds of software that you can use, right? We're talking about the...
No, we were on the budget amendment.
Okay.
You're talking about the business licensing?
Yes.
That's next.
All right.
Yes. So now public works committee report. We do have one item under economic development committee. Now I'll turn that over to Alderman Cope.
A motion to approve an ordinance adding licensing requirements and regulation of vacant buildings and authorize the mayor and the city clerk to execute.
Very second.
Second.
Comments or questions?
Second.
Now would be appropriate time.
Sorry about that, guys. I'm having a little bit of a blindness issue. So the software that is available to track the information, we're not making a decision on that right now. I think we should have that as an eventual discussion because I think the information in and of itself is valuable. I know we had talked about this before. Rather than kind of guessing on what's available, I think this is good information to feed in for economic development. So if somebody calls up and says, hey, I want to put in a dance studio, what do you have in this size and this size? Granted, some of those specifics might be a little bit hard to dial in from a list of properties, but it would give us a better idea of what's available, what's vacant currently. So I like the idea, I liked it back then, I like it a little bit more now, but I think we should definitely pursue that sooner than later.
Good, sir.
Yeah, just for a point of clarification, this came out of economic development and it did not come out with an approval. It came out with a discussion. So I guess if it's up to me and maybe after we all don't get a chance to speak, I might kick it back to committee if it's okay with the council. I guess we wanted the input of the council members who are not on EDC to get more of a broad-based input on this ordinance in general. Did not have the votes to make it out of committee, but we put it on the agenda to discuss. I do have some issues with the ordinance, and I'm sure that the members who are not on EDC, I have now had an opportunity to review it, and I would like to hear their thoughts. But at the end, I would probably ask them to table this and send it back to committee for discussion. I know I just got kicked off of Christie's Christmas card list, and I didn't see any Christmas card from her, but I do have some issues with the ordinance. There's fees involved. Some of the language, I think, you know, I think that the city probably has too much authority under the ordinance. I don't like to give the city that much authority. I think it's too big brotherish as far as, you know, you got to register your empty building, you know, your vacant buildings with the city and paying a registration fee and it gets put into the system. I understand why they want to do it. I understand the upsides. I understand the benefits. All those have been explained to me. I've read them. If I was forced to vote today, I would vote no. I have not yet been convinced that the benefits that come from this ordinance are outweighed by, once again, the burden on the residents, the burden on the owners of these buildings, the additional fees they have to pay. I'm just not a big fan of that sort of thing. So I would really be interested in hearing what everybody else has to say.
Anyone else? Ken?
Yeah, Alderman Samoa is right. I believe that's what we said at committee, that we would let the other members speak or give their opinions on it and then bring it back to committee. I know we did change some of the wording on some of the stuff at the last meeting, so. But yeah, this is more informative, I guess that's my impression.
Yes, sir.
I think our previous version of this included the inspection, which was what we kind of thought was a little bit more invasive. And I thought that's where the majority of the expense would be, in the fact that this is now somebody who has to go out and physically make an examination of the property. And I understand, like, it was $300, correct, or $250 or something like that?
$250.
Now it's like
$100.
So, like, I understand there's administrative costs because we have to have somebody that's kind of actively documenting this. But now that there isn't an inspection, maybe we can reevaluate what that dollar amount is. But then one of the other things that I talked to a couple different aldermen from different areas. Number one, if the process is somewhat voluntary, sorry if I'm not looking at you guys, I'm having a difficult time focusing. If the process was not necessarily mandatory, but voluntary at first, and we kind of learned where the holes are, I know that when you enact an ordinance, it's the rule and that's how you follow it, but I just think something like this, because it does toe a couple lines that are kind of creepy as far as government overreach, I think the information in and of itself is valuable. So if there is a way to receive the information and have it available to those who could use it, I think the benefits kind of outweigh the creepiness, but that's one of the reasons why I'm with you. It's kind of creepy. But if there was a way to start it and have it be somewhat of a mandatory collection of everybody's vacant buildings, because when we're talking about the fact that we don't have water turn-on fees for some of these things, we don't know when businesses are opening. Those are all things that we should kind of have a handle on, which we don't. But again, that's my big stumbling block, is number one, the fees, and then the fact that it could be a little bit government overreach. So yes, I'm towing the line. But at the same time, I think the information that we would be collecting has a lot of value for a couple different reasons. And I think we need to find a way to kind of make this work without having it be as creepy as we've already described.
Dan?
Well, I thought that one of the things that was changed for sure was that it doesn't include any buildings that are just in between tenants. So, like, that wouldn't even, it's mainly, like, foreclosed on places, things that have been foreclosed on, so we know about them, and, you know, if there's any problems, then we can contact the owner immediately. We know who it is. That was the whole premise of this. In fact, from Christie's point of view, the banks that own these vacant properties assume we have a vacant building registry, and they say, and they call us, and then when we say, sorry, we don't, but we'll take your information, they're like, oh, forget it. Because they know that municipalities need that information a lot of times for different purposes. It's not for people who are away renter. It's not for buildings that are vacant because they don't have a tenant at the time. It's not for people, you know, it's not for that, or if they're selling their house, it's not that. It's for that are legit vacant, where we can keep an eye on the property, we know which ones exist. That's the sole reason for it. So I don't, the argument that, well, I mean, it would be great if we knew what was vacant so we could tell Lynn so she could go and, you know, show them, but that wouldn't even work for us, actually, because then they'd have to contact the bank or whoever owns it. So that's why I was for this before, and I am for it currently, and I'll vote yes for it, but I just wanted to make that point of clarification. If I'm not right about that.
No, you're accurate.
Anyone else? Yes.
Just for a point of clarification, wasn't it maybe what you the discussion was? So I have a house next door to me that's vacant for over a year. I know who owns it. There's no, I'm looking at your criteria. You know, there is nobody living there for over a year. There are no contents in the house. So does that mean that landlord then has to register that? And I mean.
Yes.
Even though she's keeping it up, I mean, right. They have landscaping and stuff.
So yes. What will happen in that instance is we would, again, this is through information that we give somebody to call or something, mm-hmm. Or we go out and inspect and see that through our windshield that anybody's living there. We would make contact via a letter, just like we would do anyone else who could possibly have a property maintenance issue. At that time, we'll say, you know, based on this criteria, we feel that your property is the vacancy or unoccupied status, and you need to register. If they felt that they shouldn't because of whatever circumstances, there is leeway that then they could challenge us, and then the city administrator would take that information as how they felt that they're not qualifying as a vacant property, and he would have a final decision at that point. If he does not decide in a timely manner, which is usually 10 days, then that property would then be deemed granted that it's not a vacant property, instead of deemed that, you know, the waiver that they're looking for is denied. If there's a decision that then it moves to the administrative adjudication process. And they have another layer of due process where they can appeal to the hearing officer and say, no, it's being maintained, here receipts for us having the lawn, you know, cut, there's no issue with property maintenance. We're trying to get to the property maintenance issue process. So there's a couple of layers where they will have a defense to appeal whatever staff's, you know, administrative level judgment.
And my only other concern is, you know, with the fee, say a house, it's an elderly person and they pass away and there's a estate, even if it's not incorporated and it's just family. Because I get that, they could decide who's going to sell the house, and that one did become.
It would be exempt at that point because it's a land dispute.
Okay, so in that instance, though, what if it isn't taken care of? You know, because I've experienced this just in my neighborhood, low down my street. One house is being perfectly taken care of, no one's living in, then we had a house that was down, and it was a family fight over, you know.
Right. We wouldn't address it then at the vacant property level. We would address it at the property maintenance
center. Okay.
Now, we had a house. Oh, go ahead, John.
Well, and I was just going to say the memo said that there were 80 communities in Illinois that have this ordinance, but there are 1,219 communities that do not. So, I mean, there's 289 communities in Illinois, and only 80 of them have it. So it's not, I don't think it's something that has reached critical mass here in Yorkville that we need it. Mark's looking at me funny because he wants it, I know he wants it. Thankfully Mark doesn't have a vote. But I don't know, I just want you guys to really review it, think about it, vote on it. Obviously if I get out, when I get outvoted, but I just, to me, when I hear the explanations and the procedures and then the administrator and then he has the final say and then you can appeal it to the adjudicate, all I hear is government, not a big part. So it's not something that I think is that critical.
Bruce?
I agree with Carlo on this one. It is a big brother issue. There are some benefits to it. I absolutely see that. I'm concerned about some of the mechanics of how this thing is implemented and their enforcement, the fees, just the determination process. Those are some things that have concerned me throughout this entire process. I'm glad we removed the inspection component. But keep in mind, this doesn't just apply to the residential that most of our discussion is going around. It's all residential, it's also commercial, so any type of building that is vacant, so it does have an effect on our commercial landowners, the tenants, or the landlords on those. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about this. I do agree that this should go back to committee for further discussion, maybe tightening up, looking at some other ordinances as well. If I had to vote today, I'd know where I'd stand, and the Christine staff's unpleasantry would probably not go well. But.
Just one other thing. I believe in our committee, we were okay with the registry part, right? It was the other stuff that.
That's okay.
What do you, Chris, do you think that part of it was, am I right or not?
Well, part of it was the discussion of the fee, how much the fee was. We weren't sure what it would come back as with the after staff that we looked at and took out the inspection component. Candidly, I'm surprised it's as high as it still is for a registry group. This type of setup that we're not going to send somebody out to inspect. So the fees are worth considering that they're still as high that we did not take them down. And it is annual. So this is multi-year. This is annual year after year. So there are things that are concerning about it. And then Joe brought the use of information. What are we going to do with it? Is this then going to be used as an economic development tool? Is that the intent of those? I don't really think it is. This is but could it be? So there is a concern of what happens to that data. This is not a registry of businesses or vacant apartments for the use of sale or occupants. I mean, that's not necessarily the intent. The intent here is for property maintenance. That's our goal, is to deal with the property maintenance issues that we've been having. Find a way that we can try to manage that. So that's all I have.
Question. Over the winter, we had a foreclosed house with a broken pipe, right? It turned into an ice mansion. Now, how long was that vacant? I mean, would that have been a registered property? And did we have any trouble finding what paid foreclosed?
Yes.
We did have trouble finding?
We did. It took us about 3 months to figure out the paper trail, because some things weren't filed in a timely manner. We were sending notices to the homeowner, and they had already vacated the property. So there was a little lead time there. It had been vacant about a year prior to that. We didn't even know the property was vacant until we saw ice coming out of the second story.
And now it would be on the bank to register under this ordinance.
Correct.
How does the bank know? How is the bank notified? How do they even know that they have to register in the abandoned buildings?
They do call to inquire from time to time when they file foreclosure proceedings and just have something on their radar screen pre-foreclosure. And so the bigger banks will ask.
There was a law enacted a couple of years ago for the MERS, which is the mortgage electronic registry system. So anytime a property is deemed in the foreclosure process, the banks have to register through the MERS. And at that point, then they check to see, there's other companies that will do this for them, and they'll survey communities to see if they have ordinance such as this in place. And banks will pay those companies to then register their properties for them.
Okay. Anyone else? I see the benefits. I also see the concerns. We also want to bounce back to committee for further discussion.
Yes. I would move to table it and send it back to the economic development.
I'd second it.
Roll call, please.
Leschewski?
Aye.
Teeling?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Aye. Turulis?
Aye.
Colosimo?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right, I'm from Public Safety Administration, I'm from Park Board, Planning and Zoning. No city council reports, city clerk's report, and the community and liaison reports. You look excited.
I do. Mark sent out an email, but I put it out for everybody. I'm bragging, but my son has been getting creative with a brick. So all the pictures a neighbor gave him, and he's been posting on Facebook, and somehow WGN found out about it. And he was interviewed this morning by Marcus Lashak. So on Tuesday, he will be on meetings with his process and pictures.
A week from today?
Tuesday. Sometimes Tuesday. Well, he thought it was in the morning.
That would be a week from today.
It is Tuesday, yes. It is a week from today.
It's just been such a
good show. Yes, a week from today.
Okay.
So I just, you know, watched WGN morning.
In New York, it's morning.
Yes. He said he thought it might run at every week because I started at 4 in the morning. I maybe even make it into the evening. So it was kind of neat. I sat there. It was a very nice place. They sent him and a photographer out and interviewed him. And when I left, he was showing his little writing process of his phone and his pictures and how he takes these. So at that, you can see Thomas's work on Facebook on your Folk Then and Now site.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. 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 Anybody else? Thanks, Dan, for reports.
Just a couple items, Your Honor. One, there is a real estate sale contract 402 East End. It's on your desk, passed out. And I neglected to mention it before it was voted on, so I'll talk to Kathy about that afterwards. But there were three recommended changes by Kathy's associates. One was just adding these estimated square footage of the building. The second was our options that we put on the actual survey, which is on page 2. And then if you flip all the way to page 8, we did recommend bumping the actual closing date back to May 16th because we weren't sure that it was going to be voted on today. So I'll get with Kathy's associates and Kathy after the meeting and decide whether we need to amend that or that's so just in case you saw it, wondered what it was because it didn't get brought up, that's what it was.
My recommendations are it does not need to be amended. These are insubstantial changes. They're the technical aspects of a real estate closing. So with the permission of the city council, we shall leave it passed.
We'll send that out in an email too afterwards if we get a chance to talk about it.
It's just the absolute details that would not affect the terms of the agreement.
And along those same lines, there was it was one of the Department of Revenue reciprocal agreements that we'd approved a year and a half ago. And because there was a change in treasurer and a couple other state signatories, they had to change that and then get it approved. So we consider that to be a scrivener's error too, but we'll send out an email just to memorialize that there were no questions about it in the future. So, and then just the second comment about, that we really want the vacant property ordinance to pass. It's a staff recommendation to approve, but we recognize that we serve at the will of council. So I didn't want anybody to mistake that, and the reason I made the park face for the second meeting in a row was because I saw an opportunity to make the same bad joke I did at EDC, and I didn't take it. So, sorry.
Joel, make sure you buy hashtag Barkface.
Okay. Next, we have the budget we still need to approve. We have this meeting and next meeting to approve the budget. So I'll make a motion or entertain a motion to approve an ordinance approving the 2017-2018 fiscal budget, incorporating budget amendment number 1, and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
So moved.
Second.
Comments, questions, concerns? We want to pass it tonight, wait another week.
I saw the amendments, there's the training for staff for Civic Plus. What is the scope? How many staff do you anticipate that it's a week long course?
The estimate will cover 3 days. It's open ended in that there's travel cost because all their trainers are currently in Kansas. So you pay for their airfare and lodging, obviously, so that's a portion of the cost. And then they're basically just here during business hours. And it's up to us to schedule both introductory courses for somebody that hasn't taken it. There's a couple of department heads that missed it last time around. We didn't think that it was really necessary. And then anybody else that really wants to drill down on like an individual module or something that's come up. So you can kind of tailor it within that hour. So that's what it was for.
Okay. The reason I ask is, if it's just kind of willy-nilly on coming in, I should say, is there a outline of courses or objectives that they have that can be provided? I don't want somebody coming in and just sitting in there and not really achieving an objective. I want to see that they're actually being productive, that what they're actually going to learn, that it's structured through the group, and that there is some type of a measurable benefit to us. I mean, we pay $30,000+ for the software, now we're going to pay over $8,000 for training. It's an expensive piece to bite off right here for training for our staff. I know that this is going to be good, but we'll be able to use it again. So we've been kind of piecemealing in parts that we can use for the modules and, you know, having limited staff that know how to use it. Sure. I can see where there's a great use to having more departments and more staff put it out there, but I just want to make sure that this cost is just by, we have our other training. This is another large piece of training that I want to make sure it's utilized to the best of its abilities.
Yeah, you know, since the original training, there are four senior level staff members that have come on board or that didn't have the training the first time. So Christy, Rob, Aaron, and Jason Egbert, who's in community development too. So they would get like I think the first time around it was like a 6-hour course. We started at about 8 a.m. and got over like after lunch. And it goes through everything, you know, low level editing to the customer service request, tracker modules, things that would be used on a general basis so that, you know, every time we update an ordinance or if Christy has a new form for community development, they can go in and just make the update similar to how they send out an email to everybody saying, you know, hey, we've updated this form, it looks like this now, rather than sending it off to one person. And then additionally, Nicole Kaplan, who's our administrative intern, is probably going to be leaving us in about a month, and she's really been our point person on the website for the past 2 years. So she's, you know, got a fair amount of in-depth knowledge on how it works. And so we wanted to make sure that there were a couple people that could be trained really to the level that she is now. And then additionally, I know like Lisa, the deputy clerk, and a couple other admin employees, just with the way that we've rearranged the agenda modules and some of the transparency pages, like with document links and all that, could use a cleanup and a bit of a refresh. So in my opinion, we've leveraged, I think, the capacity of the website pretty well, but not everybody within the organization that, you know, could utilize that is doing so. So, you know, out of a 3-day, 8-hour, you know, block, I could imagine at least a day being in-depth, you know, full training for those four senior level employees. And then there's probably a few frontline people in Parks and Rec that I'm forgetting about too that wouldn't be considered senior level. And then 2 days for, you know, Lisa to schedule a one-on-one with certain modules. So we haven't actually gone through the step of identifying those blocks of time yet, but you know, they give you a trainer or two, they're out here for that full 8 hours. So that'd be something when we actually schedule it, we would look to, you know, fill as much time as possible.
I got a couple other questions. E9 and E10 of the memo, paper document 28 in our book, but the salaries for city treasurer and clerk, I know we are using those based from the representative. There's the savings there is $1,000 and $9,000 respectively. What's the difference on those? Obviously, those are set fees for what they're paid. Why do we have such a difference?
I believe that's because the calculation on the city treasurer was based on a previous year where there was only a partial payment for salary. And so I think we're doing a disbursement to the deputy treasurer of about that dollar amount. So I'd have to go back and take a look at the change.
So the treasurer, we're doing the disbursement for the deputy treasurer. That's why it's only $1,000 potentially?
I believe so. Yeah.
And then the salary for the clerk, that's more than what the aggregate would be if you take every meeting plus the base salary.
Well, there's $6,000 in maximum potential salary plus, you know, a few special meetings per year. But then additionally, once that position goes away, then the, I think it's a $2,900 or $3,900 deputy clerk stipend would also go away, because that would just be wrapped into whoever is is the full-time city clerk.
Okay, so that's where the other, we're going to reduce that from a different line item savings. Okay, that's fine on that one. Clarification. I had a question. As we've been breaking apart some of our contracts and our fees, putting them into the respective departments, there's one that I came across as I was just looking through, and we approved a contract for cleaning for across the city. I think it was $18,000 to change for the contract we did. I went through, and since that one was fresh in my mind, I added up everything that I could find under that line item of cleaning throughout all the departments, and it's $50,000. I know that we have a comment in here that says, quote, we are purposely trying to overestimate costs to hedge on unanticipated price increases on everything from gasoline to office cleaning. At the time that this document was released, we already had received the bid for the office cleaning. That's a pretty big overage. I mean, $18,000 to $50,000. It raises a concern for me about how we're splitting fees across different departments, and are we overestimating too much? Are we padding the budget a little bit? I mean, $30,000 is a good chunk of change just for one line item.
Yeah, that,
I've gone through a couple line items. There is some fluff in a little, but I can expect a decent percentage.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you that that would be too much fluff, if we want to call it that. If that's added up. But my guess is within some of the departments that there's probably things that are getting coded there that aren't related to the actual contract. And we approved the office cleaning contract in January, December. And so the first budget proposal that we would have probably solidified those numbers would have been probably October, November. So it is possible that some of that is overage, and some of it just could be that there's an expenditure in one of the departments that isn't related to the contract.
And that's something that, as much as I can go through the line items are aggregate for that type of a category. So that does just raise a little concern for myself that some of these, I know we've been very conservative in our budgeting. Typically, almost all line items come under budget, but how much should we be going over? This one line just brings up that point for me. Reason being is it has an effect on what we're levying every year. We levy these, and if we come in under with our expenses, that's good. That goes into the general fund, but we just have to be conscious of making sure that we're not going too far over in our estimates. So that one, I just want us to be. To check into those kind of things, make sure. And then one other one I wanted to bring up, E6 under the vehicle and equipment, this is the building and structures for parks and rec. The $250,000 that they're asking for from the Bristol 65 money so that they can put towards a new building. At this point, I think we have a few things that are still in the air, such as the downtown Riverfront Park, the remediation that we're going to have to do for that park, some clay equipment that needs to be done. I'm not certain that this one I'm favorable of at this point, especially with our new acquisition that we're going to be making of the downtown building. We have some potential room for them, for Parks and Rec to be able to utilize it. I think this would be better served to hold off on putting this line into the budget for this year and seeing how we do with the new space that we're acquiring and some of our other expenses that we know we have to take care of due to obligations with our grants and then just mitigating the park downtown and some park replacements we have. So I would look to have this line item removed from the budget for this year and reassess it coming back next year.
Anyone else? Yes, sir.
I would just like to just disagree with the idea of striking that from the budget. When we're talking about services that we offer versus potential sources of revenue for the services that we offer, I think one thing we oftentimes forget is how important the community is here. So while we haven't decided on how we're going to spend the $250, I think it's everyone's intention to make Yorkville a better Yorkville. I'm not going to use the hashtag, no matter what you say. I'm not going to make Yorkville great again. Damn, it's so easy. I don't think it's the right thing to do to pull something out that hasn't fully materialized yet. Now, when it comes time to actually pulling a trigger, I'm totally cool with being a little bit more leery, a little bit more watchful. But again, a budget is a living, working document, and that's something, whereas if you made a decision right now to pull that off of the table and rely on something else which doesn't offer much in the ways of youth programming, it's kind of like chopping off your nose to spite your face. You're gonna kick that can down the road another year. Even if we don't spend that $250, leaving it on the budget, in my opinion, does more good than bad. Whether or not we act on it or not is another different conversation for a different time.
Just on the back and forth as to whether to leave it out or take it in, you know, any expenditure over $20,000 was to be publicly bid and then approved by City Council, with the majority vote. So I would imagine that would be, either a design build or an RFP type process. And it's going to require multiple other City Council votes to approve. So, from our perspective, all that does is save you a vote of a budget amendment at a later date, if you choose to move forward with the building. So taking it out doesn't really do anything to the process, just means you take a vote later. Leaving it in signals that you are going to think about it at some point in the future. We don't have to spend it, obviously.
If I could just follow up on that real quick. Let's just be clear, this $250,000 also followed up by a request for potential another $250,000. The real number they would like to have is $500,000 to be able to do this right. And, Joel, you had actually mentioned that in the Parks and Rec board meeting that, you think that you don't want them to do $250,000, you don't want them to do $500,000, you want $1 million.
Absolutely.
To your quote, because they deserve it. I'm not saying Parks and Rec is not doing a great job. Their programming, their services are all going well. This one, I think we just have some unknowns. I'd like to look through. We're talking about where does this go. We haven't seen a lot from Parks and Rec from what this would be. I just don't think that this one is quite vetted out enough to have it in the budget. I understand it can be in the budget and then we can not do it. But we made 6 budget amendments for this past year. I'd like to, if we don't have the intent of doing this this year, let's pull it out. And if $250,000 is not right, we need to say it's $500,000 or do it right, as you said, let's do it right. But one thing I'd like to say is if we're going to do this, I wouldn't mind seeing Parks and Rec do a survey, see what people need. It's, I know we have underutilized, I think, the school district, and I know there's some issues with that for all the facilities that we have, that we can use shared facilities. But the intent here is one that will not be served by the downtown building, which is the after-school programming, the gym area, or an open view area. I get it, absolutely, that has a benefit. I'm just not sure that we're in the right place for that, and I'll stick to it that I don't think that it should be in the budget this year, because I don't think we can do it appropriately this year.
I don't know where you get the idea that we're going to utilize the school buildings. I'm in every weekend for basketball all winter long.
If I can correct that, I think it may not be that we underutilize it. Some of it is the coordination with the school district, with their issue. The time that they allow us to use it, the fact that they have conditions on when we can use it, I think that's more. You're right, we don't underutilize it. It's the manner in which we can utilize it.
Do you have something, Carolyn?
Well, just briefly, I think I understand Chris's point at E6 for the $250,000 from the park department. But I think there's enough safeguards in there that eventually we have to decide what we're going to do with that money, whether it's in the budget or not in the budget. I try to keep the number of budget amendments throughout the year to a minimum, just for audit purposes, things like that. But at the end of the day, there's no harm in a budget amendment. If we needed to do it. I kind of like that we do the budget amendments because our track record has now shown that we underestimate our net revenues, we overestimate our spending, and we've come up with a surplus in the budget every year. And that's how it should be done. And then when we have the surplus, then only then do we amend the budget to maybe sneak in one more or two more expenditures that we now already have the money confirmed. So that's, I like that because it's kept us in the black for the last 6 years. I don't mind to keep following that template because it has worked. So I don't mind if we underestimate our revenues, overestimate our spending to keep us in the black. I was going to vote no on the budget as a protest for a bill program. I have reconsidered it, and I'm not going to do that this year. However, I do have two new aldermen that I'm going to sink my hooks into and bring them onto the dark side of the bill program. So to be continued on that one. I understand Chris's concern. The fact that we have the safeguard that we still have to vote on it, we still have to decide what to do with that money down the road, and if we don't like it, we can still say no. I'm comfortable leaving it in the budget. If it was we were releasing the funds to do as they wish, and we no longer had any more control, I would agree with you. But we're not doing that, so I have no problem taking that in, and I will be voting for the budget despite my protest that I made clear last time that we are still underfunding some public work projects that need to be done in our work, that we're still wasting money on the DOE program and dumping money into that program. But I would save that battle for another day and not use the budget as leverage for that at this time.
And you're going to donate back your $10,000?
I didn't get
$10,000.
You didn't
get
$10,000?
No.
$5,000?
Yeah, $5,000. Something like that.
If everyone's okay, do we want to approve this tonight?
Yeah. I'm okay with proceeding.
Okay.
Any other comments? Roll call, please.
Teeling?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Colosimo?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Nischewski?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Any other additional business? I just have one coming up. First meeting in May, we're going to swear in two new aldermen. Joe, you get to get sworn in again in May. And we have three new committee assignments. So if anyone has any preferences, every 2 years we usually change chairman and move things around a little bit. So if anybody wants to do something different, if you have any preferences, let me know. Shoot me an email, give me a call. And we'll do that first meeting in May. There is an executive session on the agenda. I say we blow it off. Joel can't see. I don't feel good. No executive session. Any citizen comments? And anything? If there's no citizen comments, meeting adjourned.